when we're facing significant purchases, we need to be really, really careful. A significant purchase is anything around $300 or more. Some of you that are very wealthy, it may be a little bit more. Some of you that are very broke, it may be a little less. A significant purchase will cause changes in you physically when you make it. You'll get a little sweat in your palm, a little sweat on your upper lip. Your eyes will dilate a little bit. Your heart rate will increase a little bit. In general, you're going to have a physiological reaction called excitement because you're getting pumped. I'm getting to buy that thing. And if you have that reaction, there's a chance that the next day, those physiological changes in your body have worn off and you will have what's known as buyer's remorse. Have you ever bought something and woke up the next morning and go, oh, Lord, forgive me, what did I do? We've all done that. I used to sell high-end houses, expensive homes, and we had a tremendous buyer's remorse the next morning. People would come in and want to get back out of the deal. And so we had a company come in and teach us how to sell against that. And so what we would do is sit down and go, here's what's going to happen. You're all excited. This is a great thing. We're getting this contract all signed up. We're going to build this beautiful home for you. But what normally happens is you've had these physiological changes and you've perspired all these things. And you're going to wake up in the morning. Normal people wake up the next day and kind of have this feeling of, oh, what have I done? And if you have that feeling, you're just normal. Roll over and go back to sleep. Just doing that little speech cut our fallout in half. Because we normalized buyer's remorse as a part of the sales process. And that's not manipulative, or is it? Bottom line is that it's a part of the marketing process, and you need to be aware of it. And I don't know about you, but I have been in a grocery store a time or two and seen a kid in the grocery store having one of those phase 7 grocery store fits. Have you ever seen one of those? I was in there the other day and I saw one, and this kid is screaming at the top of his lungs. And his mother's got that vein on her head doing this, you know. She's getting ready to take him outside. It's not going to be good, you know. She's holding him up a little too high, carrying him out of there like this, right? And she's yelling at him, it's not in the budget. It's not in the budget. It's not in the budget. I was scared to death she was going to say, Dave Ramsey says we can't buy it. I have found out that each one of us have that grocery store kid inside of us. That kid, that little red-faced grocery store kid is living inside of us. His name is immaturity. His name is immaturity. And I know this because I went down to the furniture store and I saw this lady dressed real nice, about 40 years old, standing beside a leather couch going, I want one and you're going to buy it. And I went to the boat show and I saw this guy in camo. And he's standing beside a bass boat going, I need a bigger engine. Those bass are outrunning me. And I went to the golf store and I saw a guy in there going, I need a big Bertha. I can hit the ball like Tiger with the big Bertha. And I went back to the furniture store and there was another lady in there beside a china cabinet going, we need a china cabinet. I know we don't use the china, but I want a cabinet to put it in. And everywhere I go, including me, when I go to the electronics store. Oh, Dave.
Big screen fit, aisle 3.
Yeah. We all have that little kid inside of us. He's inside of us and he throws a fit. If we don't make that little kid behave, in other words, if you and I don't grow up and make our decisions based on the money that we really have, not on our little desires. And I work so hard, I deserve it. Oh, shut up. Seriously, whine. Call the wambulance. Really? You deserve it when you've saved up the money and can pay for it. Until then, you don't deserve it. Shocking. He said no. No is a great word. It'll set you free. No doubt about it. So, how do we gain power over our purchases? Well, we have to lay out some basic things that we say, these are the rules when we're doing a significant purchase. When there's over $300 involved, these are the rules. Rule number one is, we wait overnight. When we walk in to see something, we analyze the situation, unless we've already gathered all of our facts and have done shopping up to that point. Now, in that case, you've waited overnight because you've worked up to the process. But if you walk in and you see something and you're getting ready to impulse on an item over $300, no. Sharon and I, our rule is we wait. We step back and we wait overnight. It might be gone. There's only one. What is it, a Picasso? They're shrink wrapped on a pallet in the back, please. There is more than one. And if you get back tomorrow and there's none left at all and you missed out, maybe God is saying you weren't supposed to have it. You mean God says no? Uh-huh. He says no all the time. Chuck Swindoll says he says yes, no, or grow. These are the three answers to prayers. Yes, no, and grow. So what we're saying is he who is impulsive exalts folly. That's what the proverb says. He who is impulsive exalts folly. Folly is the verb of a fool in action. So when you're impulsive and when I'm impulsive, especially on purchases, that's a fool in action. The second thing we want to look at is we want to consider our motives, because no amount of stuff equals contentment or fulfillment. Is this a need or is this a want? I'll help you with that. It's a want. Your needs are met. You have food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and utilities. Your needs are met. To buy a better one is not a need. I needed another house. No, you wanted another house. I need a better car. You don't need a better car. You want a better car. Basic transportation is there. You're just whining about what it is. There's nothing wrong with getting a better car, but quit telling everybody it's a need. You're being a child. It's a want. There's nothing wrong with buying wants. I want you to live like no one else so that later you can live and give like no one else. It's okay, but just be an adult and say, I saved up the money. I worked hard. It fits in our overall plan. We've made a mature decision. I want it. That's okay. You're not a bad Christian because you wanted something. There's nothing wrong with you having some nice things. But let's just call it what it is. And quit chasing happiness with stuff. I'll be happy if I just got that. I'll be happy if we could live over there. I'll be happy if I had a car like that. I'll be happy if I had those shoes. I'll be happy if I had that purse. I'll be happy. No, you won't. Happiness is the bully in the schoolyard. He draws a line, and as soon as you step across the line, he backs up and draws another line. He keeps moving the line. You will never catch Mr. Happiness. And money cannot buy happiness. Money can buy fun. And it's okay for money to buy some fun. You can have some fun. You can get you a nice boat and go play on the water. You can go to Disney World or you can go on a cruise. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fun. And you should do those things, by the way. There's nothing wrong with that. If you save up and pay for it and you're doing the other things we talk about. But the trick is, don't do that because my whole life I've wanted to go to Hawaii. When I get to go to Hawaii, I'll be happy then. You're going to be let down. It's pretty, but it's not heaven. It's not. And you're not going to feel that way when you get there. Quit looking for happiness in the wrong place. It's not there. Buy some fun, but you can't buy happiness. I'll tell you this. It doesn't matter how much money you get. If you eat enough lobster, eventually it tastes like soap. None of this stuff is going to make you happy. And Jesus said this real clearly. He said, don't build bigger barns and try to get your security and your happiness out of your stuff. There's nothing wrong with saving money and having a barn full of grain. But the problem with that guy, that particular guy, was he was looking for his eternal security and his security and everything else out of what was in the barn. He wanted happiness from stuff. And you're not going to get that. It won't work for you. Never buy anything you don't understand. Now, we're going to cover stuff like investments and we're going to cover stuff like insurance in this course. So you don't put money in those things unless you understand them. But other things apply too. Quit buying anything you don't understand. You rush into something and then you find out later you've gotten a mortgage that's gotten you all twisted up and you didn't know the terms on the thing. You rush into something and you don't even know how to operate the thing you bought. Some people have a whole bowl of remotes in their house and can't work half the stuff on their TV. Don't buy things you don't understand. Consider the opportunity cost on your money. Now, opportunity cost is a financial term. If I take $5,000 and I go on a cruise with it, there's nothing wrong with that. But I lost the opportunity to fund a Roth IRA. If I take $5,000 and I fund a Roth IRA, there is nothing wrong with that. But I lost the opportunity to go on a cruise with that $5,000. So when you take a block of money and you spend it or you give it or you invest it, think about what opportunities you missed by doing that. So when you have a decision before you of substance, of size, you say to yourself, is there anything else with this block of money right now that we should be doing or that we later will wish we had done instead. That's the missed opportunity thing. A guy that I know in the investment business, when he was in his 20s, he was very successful selling investments. And he set a goal. When I make $100,000 a year, I'm going to take $40,000 out of my mutual fund and buy myself a brand new Mercedes. The year was 1986, many, many years ago. Well, sure enough, he hit his $100,000 mark, and he went down to get the new Mercedes. He was a young pup in his 20s. The Mercedes guy's like, how are you going to pay for this? And he said, well, I just took the cash out of my mutual fund. I'm going to write a check. And the guy's like, okay, let's look, right? And so he says, I get that Mercedes. And he said, I just want to test drive it. And the guy said, that's fine. Why don't you just take it home? And you can come back tomorrow. And if you want to buy it, we'll do the paperwork then. Because once you take it home, you know you can't bring it back, right? That's a sales technique. And he said, I drove that thing. And out there on the emblem was that Mercedes right there on the hood sticking up out there. And he said, man, that was just saying to me, you are a success. And he said, in case I didn't look there, I could look right there on the steering wheel. There was another one saying, you are a success. He said, it was everything. It smelled rich. It was rich. It was fun to drive. I pulled up in the driveway. My wife came running out squealing. And she's like, you did it. You did it. You finally hit your goals. I'm so proud of you. Your success. The neighbors came over. They rubbed on the car, you know, the whole thing. He said, I made a mistake. I took out my financial calculator and I looked at what my $40,000 for this Mercedes might be worth in a few years and I couldn't do it. I took the car back. I bought a $6,000 car. I put that $40,000 in a mutual fund. He said, I never added to it. Now, many years later, he was very, very wealthy, as you might imagine. And 12 years later, he was driving a very, very nice vehicle and he pulled up at a stoplight. And he noticed a 1986 Mercedes, just like he had always wanted, next to him. And he rolled down his window in his really nice car and said, sir, I don't want to be a snob or be rude, but I'm curious, do you have any idea what that car's worth? And the guy says, yes, I just bought it, and the book value on it, I just got it at book. I'm really proud of it. It's an awesome car. I paid $4,000 for it. The $40,000 turned into $4,000 in 12 years. He said, what was interesting was I went home and I opened my mutual fund statement. I've never added anything to that mutual fund except that original $40,000. And 12 years later, it was $300,000. He said, so that I could have had a $4,000 car or a $300,000 mutual fund. I think I made a good choice. That's the opportunity cost on your money. The last thing you want to do when you're putting up a barrier between you and purchases is always seek the counsel of your spouse. Always talk it through with your spouse. The Bible is real clear on this. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain. Gentlemen, listen to me carefully. If you are married to a virtuous wife, lady, that means you are not a barking chihuahua. And God did not give you permission to become the Holy Spirit here. But if you are married to a virtuous wife, like I am, and you will listen to her counsel on these major decisions. Look at that very carefully. You will have no lack of gain. And by the way, I think God wouldn't be mad at us for taking a little bit of liberty for that and switching it around a little bit. Who can find a virtuous husband? For his worth is far above rubies. The heart of his wife safely trusts him, and she will have no lack of gain. Learn to work together when you're married and seek the counsel of your spouse. You will make much better decisions. Sharon and I do no giving and we do no major purchases. We do almost no minor purchases unless we are in unity on the decision. We have to be unified on the decision. If we're getting ready to give to something, to some ministry, and Sharon has a bad feeling about it, if she has a feeling, that's known as the Holy Spirit. We listen to that. She's from the South, and one of those failings, every time financially I go against one of those failings, cost me $10,000. I quit going against those failings a long time ago. And you know what? Sometimes she's looking at something and I have a sense about it. I get a check in my spirit. And we have learned to work together. It is one of the most valuable decision-making tools you can have is to respect each other's opinion, be respectful of each other's opinion, and use that as a decision-making tool.